Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful to each and every one of you who will join us tonight and have joined us in the past. We welcome you to our dialogue, 657-383-0944. Is the number to call into the live studio tonight, and you can join our conversation. We're very much happy to have you. Bear with us, Facebook. Look like we're having some technical difficulties there. We have rain. We have serious rain. So what we're going to do is that we're going to restart our live stream. But nonetheless, our podcast on blogtalkradio.com continues. 657-383-0944. That is another call to join us tonight. All right? As with always, we're going to begin with our monologue. And just bear with me for a second as we try to get our live stream up and going here. Okay, I think we're almost there. All right, let's go. Let's just, the weather, you know, it has that effect on us sometimes. Sometimes we can't even control it. But anyway, we're grateful again to be here to each and every one of you again, as I said. And let's hope we can get our audience there on Facebook Live going with us. And if you just bear with me, I'm going to reach them very quickly, okay? Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to play my song for tonight, Clarence Carter. And it is related to our topic, what it means to be a father, all right? And meanwhile, we'll get Facebook set up there. And I think we're live now. We just got to do a few other things. And y'all, come on, get in where you fit in. 657-383-0944 Facebook. That's the number, 657-383-0944. If you're looking at us on the Blog Talk Radio platform, you can see our advertisement there as well as the number to call, 657-383-0944. We'll let Clarence play for us in a little bit in the background, then I'll come on in just a second. Listen to what he says about a relationship between a father and a son.
Born and raised down in Alabama, on the farm way back up in the woods. I was so ragged, folks used to call me Patsy. Papa used to be somebody, folks deep down inside, he was good to see the all he could. My papa was a great old man, I became a man that day. Well, I told Mama I was going to quit school, but she said that was Daddy's script to school. So every morning, I was waiting for the chicken and a chop for tea. I felt that I couldn't go on. I wanted to leave the door away from home. But I was a temple, but the day is there. The tears in his eyes, on his body's face.
The importance of fatherhood as a factor in a child's life cannot, and I emphasize, cannot be emphasized enough. What we see, in fact, stand the root cause of wayward young people that we see about, we hear about, we read about too often across urban America, is to recognize the degree to which young people lack healthy relationships with their fathers. Am I talking about everybody? Absolutely not. I'm speaking about this population of individuals who need us to love them enough to embrace them and share the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Let's be clear. There is a major distinction between being a biological progenitor and being a father. Let me say that again. There's a major distinction between being a biological progenitor and being a father. More than ever before, urban Americans, or America, should say, desperately need to return to fathers and children being together, families that we once had historically. Okay? It will revitalize and change, literally, our neighborhoods, our families, neighborhoods, our cities. Join me tonight as we talk from the topic, what it means to be a father. What it means to be a father. And yes, implied in the title, deliberately, is the inference that there's a misunderstanding or misnomer about what a father is and what that all plays out to be. We're in the month of June, and we're coming upon Father's Day pretty soon, another couple of weeks or so. And it is about time for us to get there. Okay? We definitely need to know this. Tonight, I'm speaking on a topic of which I have penned great thought. I conducted several seminars and workshops since 2006 to present. We've produced a few things, self-published some works and so forth and so on, and engaged a number of people on this level. Over the last roughly 15, 16 years or greater, we've been focusing our attention on this particular issue. This is something that we have a pretty strong hold in, all right? Feel free to give me a call tonight, 657-383-0944. Ladies, I would love to engage you and to hear your thoughts and your ideas. If you're following us on live stream with Facebook, what you can do is simply post your question and or comment there, and I'd be happy to integrate them in our conversation, okay? We welcome everybody to call, and all we ask is that sometimes the conversation gets a little heated. Sometimes we have varying opinions, and that's perfectly fine. The purpose of our monologue, particularly if you're new to the show, is to give some context to the topic and offer for tonight, that being what it means to be a father. So you will hear some things that you can reference and go behind me and check to see. All right? And ultimately, we will facilitate our dialogue, our conversation tonight, and you can rest assured that the host and the producer of Talk Straight, yours truly, Reverend Dockery, will ensure that any question that you might have, if I don't have the answer, we're going to go to find them. All right? But certainly we're going to offer you a thoughtful response to any question that you ask in our dialogue tonight. All right. So we're going to go right to our monologue here and get with it. June the 8th, 2021, Tuesday night. The text in Malachi, the fourth chapter, fifth and the sixth verse, reads like this. Behold, I will send you Elijah, the prophet, before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. Verse 6 says, and he shall turn the hearts of fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers. Watch this. Lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Implied in the text is the purpose and the function and the necessity for fathers. Therefore, it begs the question, then what does it mean to be a father? If we ever seen before what appears to be a social curse that ails many neighborhoods and communities across urban America, we've seen it today, not just in 2021 or 2020, but years before that. In many ways, 2020 pulled the cover and the scab off of a lot of things and exposed a lot of people. Okay? So I'm not suggesting that this is a brand new problem that just popped up. Not at all. If you know anything about me, you know I've been talking about this for a long time. So why we still have it, Doctor? Because we haven't done what is necessary to resolve this issue. Since we haven't done it, we got a good opportunity today on June 6, 2021. Get on the good foot. All right? Let's start by this, giving a functional meaning of this concept of fatherlessness. All right? And I don't want to make it too simple or water it down, but I want to give us a basic concept of operating. Consider that it is a condition. Fatherlessness is a condition of having no father, either because they are deceased or they're absent for other reasons from the home and the life of a child, that being a male or a female. But, beloved, rest assured that we have a problem with fatherlessness in America. And let me just hasten to say, it's not just a black problem, but it's a social ill facing our nation. Unfortunately, for a long time, we've seen this prevalent in Afro-American families and neighborhoods and communities. Okay? There's a lot of research that talks about the absence of fathers affects children's academic performance. It affects their social-emotional competence and ability. It affects their ability to be successful overall, among other things. I'm not going there tonight, but I'm going to define fatherhood. When I get through, I'm going to talk to you about some things that conflict with this concept of fatherhood. In other words, you're not going to be able to have both of them at the same time. It's got to be one or nothing. Now, either we want to be deliberate about fatherhood and the life of our children and our families, or we don't. I certainly do, for the record. I do. All right? So order. Here we go. Fatherhood is the most exalted level of masculine human development. It represents the fullness of mankind's divine abilities in the earth. A man has the potential, beloved, to live forever. What, Jeffrey? Yes, yes, yes. Yes. But it's through his offspring from one generation to the next. Now, as long as this man's children and his grandchildren and great-grandchildren and so on and so on continue his name, his legacy, and their heritage through him, he lives forever based on the instruction and example that he gave the first generation. His honor continues throughout history. We've seen other historical figures. So in essence, man can live forever through his children and through his reputation, just like Elohim, God, the creator, lives through man. That's what it means in Genesis when it says made in his likeness and his image. You have the potential. All right, let me keep going. Now, man was created to operate like the creator. What do you mean by that, Doctor? Well, here you go. In considering the fact that he is equipped with certain things, consider this now. I want you to follow me, okay? To follow me, just for a second. I said that he was made to operate in the likeness of Elohim, the over Elohim, the Lord God of creation. Now, here's what I mean by that. So, when he was made, he was equipped with certain things. I call them tools. These tools were designed to empower him to master, conquer, and control his domain, wherever that is. Okay? These tools include his head, his arms, legs, and his reproductive organs. Let's talk about the head first. The head represents his knowledge base, thought. In the Strong's Office in Corinthians, the Hebrew concept that had to do with Adam or man was 4121, Zohar, which means to be mindful of or remember. That was the thought in his head. All right. Then what we have outside of the head are the arms. But what these arms were, Doctrine, which represents his ability to reach out and to manipulate everything in his reach in the earth and manipulate it to his benefit. So he got the ability to think, the reason. Got the ability to reach, grab, and mechanically move and manipulate. Are y'all with me? Well, how does he get from one point to another? I guess you figured it out already. He got some legs. Huh? Thighs, calves, ankles, feet, part of the leg. He can move from one point to another. He's mobile in the earth with his authority. Are y'all walking with me? Well, the last thing is that he's equipped with the ability to replicate himself. So when Elohim decided that man was incomplete in Genesis first chapter, second chapter, he put him asleep. The text suggests and extracted something out of him. This is the interesting thing right here, beloved. It wasn't just the male or masculine aspect of him, but extracted out of him was a feminine side. Some would say his best side, his strongest side. In the Hebrew, it's called Bersheta. That is his soulmate. Are you with me? Stay with me. Just walk with me. And so, beloved, what happens is that Elohim, in his infinite wisdom, made man to have everything he needed, not only to exist then, but to continue his existence in the earth. Thus, if he did this right, he can become immortal. Since the beginning of creation, man has had certain abilities and certain tools, hadn't collectively and used them all the right way, through wars and greed and what have you, destroyed a lot of things, but nonetheless, he had these abilities. when a man, male and female, that's a male and a female come together and they produce children. I told you the difference between being just a progenitor and a father. Okay? Fatherhood has to do with this commitment, this thought, and this rational consideration and determination to bring promise in a relationship and to be fruitful in it through offspring. You understand with me? So when this man begets children of promise through marriage, yeah, I'm meddling tonight. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. That was the purpose of you being able to hook up with a young lady and make babies, is so that together you can create promise and sustain manhood forever. When he does this, and he follows the divine plan of creation, crosses the threshold between just being a man or being in the state of manhood and a husband into fatherhood. That's what fatherhood is. Recognizing that you don't exist by yourself, and a pivotal part of who you are as a whole man is your spouse, your soulmate, your preceptor, and by extension, your offspring, your children. This is what fatherhood is all about. Now, unfortunately, things have happened in many people's experience that has robbed them of this divine principle. The good news is that there's yet hope on June 8, 2021 to get there. I know that there's a lot of hurt. I know there's a lot of pain. But beloved, understanding this will help us move forward in breaking that cycle. One other thing I want you to consider about fatherhood is understand that this, again, is a divine thing. It's not something to take lightly. It's not something that you automatically get. You have to earn that. It's a process. A process. Perhaps Thursday we'll focus on what is the growth process from being born a male to becoming a father. Tonight we're introducing the concept of fatherhood. And my intention is on the 17th, I believe it is to invite fathers to come and share their stories with them. What does it mean to them to be fathers? All right, but tonight we're finding what fatherhood is. Consider this as we get ready to open up the phone lines. And the number is 657-383-0944. Post your question or comment on Facebook. I'll be happy to engage you in that regard as well. Consider this, beloved. A father serves in the life of his children and in his family as a priest. As a priest. Now, a priest is a mediator between God and people. Pretty quiet. That's up. For father, fatherhood is priestly in nature. In other words, you are a servant. You're a mediator between your family and the Creator. Wait a minute. Somebody's going to say, that's not politically correct because that's not recognizing a woman. I just explained to you earlier that part of what makes a whole man is male and female. Don't get it twisted. Part of what makes a man is not someone that's audacious and cocky and naive, but someone who understands that a pivotal part of his success is his female counterpart. All right, don't look for me to give you nothing politically correct. I don't get out like that. All right, let's move on. Let's move on. Man is a priest. He is the instructor. He's the master or the headmaster of his children learning. He's a protector, and he provides for his family. Now watch this. Since ancient times, it has been the role of the father to serve as that priest and in that position that mediated between his family and the Almighty. In the Old Testament, what you would see often, by example of Joshua, when he made that declaration, as for me, and we've lost that, especially in 2021. There's nothing wrong with a boy growing up to become a man and stepping into the responsibility of a husband and a father and making a declaration that I'm going to define what goes for me and my house. But you've got to have one. What we got to do is help these young brothers learn how to grow up and men become fathers, not just progenitors. He is responsible for seeing to it that spiritual integrity between he, his wife, and his children is there, and to secure that for them. As a leader in the family, his responsibility is to master his own destiny and to have a vision and a focus that he and his wife will work toward. If it goes good, it's his fault. If it goes bad, it's his fault. Now, in the role of protector, the father secures the proper environment. I want to put a pin right there. We see a lot of our babies coming from home environments that are dysfunctional. And I don't say that disrespectfully. I say that as an identifier of where the problem lies, what we need to be focusing on. Here is what happens in the absence of a father. Children don't have that covering. They don't have that authority. They don't have that promise. And this is why the home is broken. Does that mean that mama is not doing the very best she can? Absolutely not. It certainly didn't mean that for my mother. Unfortunately, my parents never divorced, but they separated. And the circumstance was such that even though we knew where daddy was, we could always go with him and spend time with him, the circumstance was that he was not under the same roof. That had an effect. That had an effect. We were able to get past that and process that, and we were able to break that cycle. That's the good news. Before he went on to glory. All right? Before she went on to glory as well. But the point here is that the father's responsibility is to provide that environment by which the values that shape the character of the children of promise, my God, help the Holy Ghost, will be maintained. Every responsible adult needs their own place. We can talk about it. Now, in relationship to the discussion of young Afro-urban American males, collectively speaking, and the negative plight that many of them face, this is a discussion that preachers ought to focus on. Why, Dockery? Because the Bible says in Malachi, the fourth chapter, verses 5 and 6, that God is going to send Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And watch this. He will turn the hearts of fathers back to their children and the hearts of children to their fathers. And if this don't happen, you know, the earth will be smoked with a curse. In urban America, there is a serious curse that's been going on too long. And I submit to you that the reversing of the curse involves a return to healthy fatherhood, or to fatherhood, period. All right? 657-383-0944. That's the number you can call. If you're on Facebook, what did I say? I said if you're on Facebook, post your question and comment right now. Don't wait. Right now. And if somebody else calls in, we'll put them on. We'll put your question and comment on. I'll read that and I'll share it. But until you come, look at, I'm going to go back to Clarence and let him finish a little bit talking about this relationship between the father and the son. In this is Clarence Carter we're talking about, late Clarence Carter. A very powerful song entitled Patches. And in it, he describes this relationship between this poor, what was described as a sharecropper down in Alabama, deep south, who struggled. But there were some things that he had for his children and some things he taught them that he knew would prepare them for moments like his passing. That he empowered his son, he disciplined him to be able to take care of the family. I listened to Clarence Carter Patches. That's for a little bit more. 657-383-0944. That's the number to call right now. Right now. Go ahead and call. Get in the studio. We'll come right back to you. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dodd. Tonight we're talking from the topic, what it means to be a father. Some people don't like this conversation. See, some people, when we get through listening to Carter, to Clarence Carter, you'll join us here, 657-383-0944, and we'll talk about why this doesn't work today. What are the barriers to fatherhood? All right? Here we go. Clarence. Yes, Clarence. Yes.
Even watchdogs across the way. And at the age of 13, I thought I was carrying the weight of the whole world on my shoulders. And you know, Mama knew what I was going through, because everything I had to work was still. No matter how the women got out here to see, the whole of the family, and everybody has depended on me.
Like a lot of weight on a young man, though, to have to take over where daddy left off. But look, in 2021, our young people are the ones that are streaking terror in many neighborhoods and streets. Not that they're bad people, but there's a conditioning. And as I said earlier, because of fatherlessness and because forces that discourage young men to marry and to start families with the young girls they fall in love with, get a twinkle in the eye about, we got a problem here. We got on with us Pastor Ricky Waller, our co-host. Welcome, sir, to the show. How you doing? But Pastor?
All right. How you doing, Pastor Doctor?
We're holding it in a row the very best that we can. The best that we can.
That's good.
All right?
That's good.
And if you don't mind, welcome St. Louis, who's joining us as well, to the discussion tonight.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good discussion. And too bad we couldn't get Patches to come on with us.
Uh-oh. Well, one of us might be Patches, St. Louis. I don't know. One of us might be
Patches. I see where Kwame Kilpatrick is out of jail, thanks to Donald Trump, and he's going into the ministries.
Is that right? Okay. I didn't see that. I didn't know that. Okay. And for the sake of our listening audience, that was the former mayor of Detroit who got caught up in some stuff. You know what I mean? Promising young man who had a brilliant political career ahead of him, if you was right. But anyway, okay. All right. I guess that's good. I wish him the very best. What it means to be a father. Now, Pastor Waller, you know, I make a fuss about this, that too many people literally denigrates the essence of fatherhood. Now, here's a big problem, gentlemen. Here's a big problem. Today, because everybody has tried to, in their own way, redefine family and redefine roles and functions in family and in society, it looks like the line is being erased more and more for responsible fatherhood. Now, I'm just curious to know what your response to that. Pastor Wilder, you want to respond to that first, and then we'll go to St. Louis?
I'm going to say that I would listen in, and I would be able to elaborate on a few things that I'm familiar with. I think they got some very intelligent young people in the world today, in whatever arena they're in. And I've often thought about how the Word of God said how he actually embraced the poor just as well as the rich because he made them both. And so it sums up by way of not having no excuse where you grew up at, where you're located, who you're around, what kind of people you may think they are and things like that. It has to do with living and learning. And not everybody's going to look the same way, so I wouldn't dare, you know, to put what I think by way of an opinion that it ought to be. So I'm just going to tune in and talk what I know and not what I think. You know, because
fair enough.
It's something about not do that, being lured back into the fool position, you know, like trusting my own self. And see, since I stopped doing that, I have to make sure I have to guard my thoughts, you know, my way of doing things and who I lean and depend upon. So I'm always put God first and make sure that I follow his lead. Even when I make mistakes, like I'm sure that I will do and have done, made plenty of them, but this is one I like to make sure I don't make, and that is to have the guide that I need to direct my pathway so I can know how to speak when it comes down to things like what we're getting ready to talk about now. So my opinion wouldn't be strong enough because I don't like being wrong. So I can say where I grew up at, then I turn it back over to you. Where I grew up at, man, there was some really, even then, intelligent people. Just so happened, one kid got lured into a lifestyle, still now intelligent, but just was a fool because he trusted in his own heart. And he was able to go about doing things as he learned. I'm talking about me now. Then when I became aware that I was a fool, I discovered that I needed some guidance and some help. So I decided to put my hand in God's hand, man. And, so that's where we are right now with what I can do and what I'm unable to do. I've learned to accept what I can't do, and I'm encouraged by what I can do. And that is to encourage the youth, the young that I know that I can do some good with. You and I, we got something upcoming that be encouraged by the opportunity when it presents itself to see what kind of kids that would be right in the midst of what one would call the ghetto. But I don't I don't look at it as that, you know what I mean? I look at them as they are people and intelligent at that. One of the kids did have a chance to say hello to you. One kid pulled up last week and wanted to pray. You heard that little kid there. He was 8 years of age. So
absolutely,
it's a lot of hunger and thirst in the young today. That's where I'm at. They're
thank
hungry
you,
and thirsty.
All right. As I preference at the beginning of the show, this is a topic that I've spent at least 16 years focusing on, and we hadn't stopped yet. So I certainly am in a position to expositate on quite a bit here. But St. Louis, I yield the floor to you, sir. What say you in terms of the things that challenge responsible fatherhood today?
Well, that's a individual that has to be made and constructed. For it to be done right, a boy can be a father.
Explain that to me. What do you mean?
They can make a baby.
That's what makes them a father that is capable of making a baby?
It may not make them a baby as far as standards are concerned, but they are the father of their child as designation.
Interesting.
Now,
well,
if you want to produce, you want to produce a man, that's a process. The best type of father is a man, not just a male.
That's interesting.
Because I've seen Caitlyn Jenner, well, not Caitlyn Jenner, but I've seen females that consider themselves males can take on the designation of father. I've seen two males with a child. One of them is the daddy, the other is the father. Where they go about designating themselves.
I see what you're saying. So what I'm going to do Thursday night is I'm going to delineate the process from being born into the world as a male, a biological male, and evolving possibly to a father. There's a difference. It's impossible for a female to be a father. It's impossible for a male who has not reached and demonstrated certain characteristics to be so. Now, it's possible for you to be a male and to make a baby, to be a progenitor. A progenitor only is one that offers sperm in the process of fertilizing an egg to a zygote that grows into a human being. Different, it's a whole totally different thing. But that's, I'm glad we're having this conversation. I'm glad we're having this conversation. And the point here is this. There are a lot of good brothers who want and are desperate and hungry for the knowledge of how to get to that point where we talk about bringing success to young people. When we look at young people that are out of order, you just look at all of these areas. And we've had at least 6 killings here, Pastor Waller, in Nashville in the last week. 6. Now, Chicago seemed to multiply that, oddly enough. Atlanta seemed to be going off the chain, and several other places around the country. My point is this. Anywhere you see those incidents, I submit to you that's a young person who did not have the voice and the authority of a father, a priest in their life. That's what I submit to you. Now, somebody might not agree with that. We can have a dialogue about it. Let's, you know, and I'm what I'm gonna offer you. I'm like Pastor Wallen now. All I'm gonna do is offer you what I know. I ain't gonna tell you what I think or what I heard. I'm gonna tell you what I know. So, but that's an interesting thing, Samuel. Go ahead.
Well, it can apply to females too. They must not kneel when you see them on the top of police car hoods twerking.
Uh-oh, what? Say what? What about the female now? What about twerking? What's that?
And say when you see them on police vehicles, as in St. Louis, on the hood with their butt toward the police driver twerking, as you seen them in, I think it was Chicago, on the police vehicle, and the police vehicle was driving. That cop, that officer needs to be fired. They on the hood twerking, standing on top of someone over trying to kick the window out.
So you know who would tell a young lady how to respect themselves and hold themselves wholesome? Their mother covering for that is that voice from the father. When we think about who was that Pastor Waller that made that song talking about Oblivion, that got lost and turned out. This character.
The Whispers.
The Whispers, that's right. Even though it was a fictitious character in the song, it was very real. And guess what, y'all? Unfortunately, that thing was real on June 8, 2021. There are a lot of people who still seeking love in all the wrong places, getting lost and turned out. Why? Why? Because early on, there was not a voice that told them how to comport, respect, and to carry themselves in such a way. Now, yes, there's a thing called rape and violating people. That's a different story. That happens. But when a person has certain, they're taught certain values and how to display certain characteristics, there's an outcome for them. That's not happenstance. That's not mistake. Because I talked about in the monologue this concept of commerce. And Elohim, God gave man and woman, male and female, the ability to come together in promise. And when they come together in promise, guess what? Their children prosper. That's the catch right there. Now, here's the problem today, gentlemen. Here's the problem today. You got everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, there are a lot of people who want to make the case that you can, as St. Louis was alluding to, you can define yourself as something else. I don't care what I say, St. Louis. I can say that I got the ability to fly and to live eternally no matter what I do. But let me jump off a 10-story building and fall head first. You about know what my price is going to be, right, Samuel? I don't care what I convinced myself of before I took that plunge. Reality is going to kick in. Reality is going to kick in. And what I'm saying is that when it comes to fatherhood and it comes to the role and the expectation of a father, we've got to come into Father's Day, and we want people to be recognized. There are some people doing the best they can. That's why I was listening to you, and you were saying that you're only going to speak what you know. You've penned a lot of what you know about fatherhood in your book. I read it, and it's a beautiful story about how you recognize that you didn't have time to play around. Did that mean you did everything right? No. It's a trial and error thing, and we grow into it, right, over time. But what you knew for sure is that you couldn't mess around no more. And I don't want to speak for you. I'm going to yield the floor so you can tell us about that. Well, you talked about, and I had the privilege of meeting your daughter and your grandchildren, beautiful young men, beautiful grandchildren, right? But what if you decided that you were not going to be responsible and step out of the foolishness that you were in at the moment? You understand what I'm saying, Pastor Ron?
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Because you could have kept on what you were doing, man. You know what I mean? But something in you, that was something in you. I'm sorry, let me be quiet.
It was just, sitting in church one day, after the mother had given me the child, and I knew I was still in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, while I was sitting there, actually, it's a picture in the book where she was sitting on my left.
I saw that.
And wasn't even walking yet, thinking about what it would be like if I wasn't going to be there to bring her up if I was in prison. And it's like, okay, so I had to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't easy, but, it was a decision that I knew I had no doubt about that I was going to make.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to be here for the child. And so I walked away from the game, make a long story short, something that I know is very hard to do for many. And I wasn't behind bars and being walked away. I walked away from it while I was yet in the midst of it. So that let me know that God did give me the strength to be able to not return once I walked away from it. And so it came out.
I think so. If I could give my opinion, my observation, I thought so. I think so. And it continues to manifest itself. Absolutely, absolutely. St. Louis, I've heard you make reference on numerous occasions since you've been joining us about your grandchildren. I don't know if I remember specifically your children, but I'm assuming that by extension, they passed it on to your grandchildren. And you identified certain successes, them being able to successfully complete certain things. Would you care to speak to that for a moment as a father and a grandfather?
Well, that was what I demanded.
Okay.
Because your kids respect their parents, and they obey.
I see. Okay.
So you're supposed to set the standard and put the necessary safeguards in place. Then you step out and let them go on about their life. Always there, open for comments and suggestions.
But
some things I demand, and of course they deliver.
You know what, though? You had that rightful authority to demand that. Because if things went wrong for them, rightfully people were going to be looking at you as the head of their family, right? As their father.
Absolutely. That's what they always do. See, my children wouldn't be taught no critical race theory. It's not going to happen.
Okay.
They weren't going to be my kindergarten. If it was in kindergarten, they weren't going to have a cross-dresser reading to them in the kindergarten class dressed in a clown outfit rolling around on the floor.
What?
It wasn't going to happen.
I understand that. I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that.
My teacher, the teachers for my child, were not going to be openly gay.
Okay.
It wasn't going to happen.
All right.
I don't have anything against them. I respect them, but I'm not going to accept that for my kids.
We're not talking about having anything against them. What does that do, those examples that you just described? How does that counter the instruction and the values that you taught your children? That's what I'm hearing.
Well, you don't expose. You don't see. You don't give a flower an opportunity to be contaminated as much as you possibly can. Mm. So you want it to stay as pure as possible and protect it. And that's the responsibility of a parent. You're supposed to protect the child. A child is innocence. It's the innocence of a child. That's why the law stepped in. The law is there to provide protection for the innocence of a child. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't say that child should have known better than you, an adult, teaching them or exposing them to something. They're a child. Mm-hmm. They're innocent. They're innocent of consequences.
Okay.
They don't know.
Okay. I hear, gentlemen, a lot of people say that the law won't allow you to discipline your children. And I have tried to respectfully redirect that thought to say what the law does prevent is abuse and neglect. Now, in terms of disciplining children, it begins with first you establishing, again, that voice of authority for them and maintaining an environment by which whatever your instruction and examples are, that's what discipline is, an example. That's where it begins.
Mm-hmm.
And that example is reinforced on different levels. That's why it's vitally important for fathers to make sure that while you're working and providing for your family, that you spend quality time with your children such that no other person becomes their hero. You are their hero.
Absolutely right. The father is supposed to provide the guidance, they're the head of the household.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen children discipline their parents.
That's rough there. Pastor Wallace, I think I shared this with you, Pastor Wallace. When I was working, I was a supervisor at a youth detention facility. And before I became a supervisor, actually, I was working the visitation, where young men were there because the state had taken them out of the custody of their parents. Well, this young man was in the dope game, okay, put it simply. Bless his heart. Good little fella, man. Had a good heart on him. So his mom came up, and what we had to do when everybody came in is to make sure that they wasn't carrying any contraband or introducing anything to the children in there, right? So the mom came in, and she was searching everything, but I noticed on every finger, Pastor Wallace, he had gold rings, had a harem bone chain on him, and other, a leather suit, full leather suit. Looked like he was balling, right? He was hot, man. And if they ever get into a fight or get out of order, immediately the policy, the procedure was to take them back to their dorm, end their visitation, send their family home, and end the visitation. Well, he was mad the whole time he came in that visitation gallery. He looked at her, and he was hot. And before you know it, gentlemen, he got up and started cussing her out. Man, what is going on? Of course, you know what we have to do. We have to end the visitation. And I said, well, I took him before, you know, before we did, the mom and sent her home and whatnot. She's looking bewildered, and the little sister knows what's going on. What it was that his dope money, Pastor Waller, whatever his money was, she had spent all of it on herself.
Yeah.
And I pulled him to the side as we were searching him, getting ready to take him back. I said, man, don't ever let me hear you talk to your mama like that. You don't disrespect, this is what you're saying, son. You don't disrespect me. He said, you don't understand. I told her how much she can use, and I told her not to spend all that money. I got to pay that money back, Pastor Wallace. Left him in the pickle. You understand what I'm saying? And
yeah.
So, go ahead, go ahead. You're going to say something. Go ahead.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just...
So there are reasons why oftentimes it looks like the children are the parents, you know, and the parent is the child. Well, I would argue with you that there are some social ills that didn't just start yesterday, but they've been going on for decades. And Andrew Billinson Lee and Carol McAdoo did a great job of identifying some of those factors for me. And they book Black Families in America and a couple of other books they wrote where they talked about the demise of the Afro-American family when integration kicked in and when there was not a drive for fathers to be there with children because of things like public assistance that many times augmented or instigated the leaving of fathers from home for different reasons or whatever. And I'm not going into all those details, but I'm simply trying to make the point that there are numbers. The war, the Vietnam War and the conflict that sent a lot of men over to fight in the war and what have you and left their mothers by themselves trying to raise their children. There were a number of factors that led to the breakdown in the Afro-American subculture in terms of the family unit and core. And it seems like we've just been going backwards ever since.
Well, I'm not going to blame use integration as an excuse.
No,
people did
totally
what they wanted to and did not want to. That's what it is.
Interesting.
That's like this old cliche, people use the excuse saying blacks won't come together. Well, in every ethnic group, you got people that don't want to commingle, don't want to associate, and then you got just the opposite.
Okay. Okay.
It's not no responsibility. It's not no... it's not etched in stone. I tell you what.
What's that?
People talk about blacks won't come together. All right.
I have.
Look at the ones that do come together. Let's take the Mexicans, for instance. You may have 20 of them live in one household. Are blacks, any blacks, or you want to do that? There's nothing stopping you. The people that's working together on something, they live in a household that may have 20 people in it. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. You know why you don't? Because you don't want to do it.
Interesting. You know, we've talked about that, St. Louis, about the conflict between the identification of being black versus being African-American versus being Afro-American or something else, right? Everybody don't agree with that. Everybody don't subscribe to it. There are some people who just want to live life and don't want to have to be classified by somebody else. You understand what I'm saying? Interesting dynamics, though. But now I would argue here, Jeremy, that given the context of the problem that we have in our target area of urban America and looking at the factors, the risk factors, clearly the absence of the principles of fatherhood are missing. And one of those principles is working in concert with the mother of the children. There are reasons. Sometimes guys are locked up. Sometimes they're incarcerated, right? Sometimes they're dead. Sometimes they're strung out on drugs. Sometimes they're mentally ill. I understand. There are a lot of factors, right? But there is a role of a surrogate father. In the absence of that biological progenitor, someone who assumes that role of a father, could be an uncle, could be someone else. A lot of times, Pastor Rollin, it's assumed that if I send my children to church, that the preacher and the deacons and the other men there are going to do that for me. But you all know that there's a lot of loss of trust there, right? Y'all know that, right? Because unfortunately, go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, you know that it happens sometimes.
It does, unfortunately. And people lose trust yet again in those figures or those people. When I was on the mayor's task force, I suggested to them that there were informal voices of authority that young cats listen to on the streets. The gangbanger, the drug dealer, the hustler, right? And I said to, there were some lawyers in the room, some educators and some health professionals and what have you. You should have saw the faces. I said to them, we are missing out on a very vital resource to help us gain the attention of these young people that are out of order, that are juvenile delinquents and what have you, when we do not work with the drug dealer, the gangbanger, the hustler. You know why? Because they're looking to them for example, first and foremost, quite often. Am I wrong about that, Brother Preacher?
I would say no. I don't think you're wrong. You know, it's just there's so many different scenarios here that I was thinking about, you know, how do people on one particular side of town conduct themselves and how do mm-hmm. one conduct themselves on the side. So it all has mm-hmm. to do with, you know, what is the going thing? You know, how is it that so many people, and I'm talking about young and of age, would cleave to certain things and mm. they're not even on the north side, but yet still it was able to reach the south side, the east side,
that's
the west
right.
side. And that style became, you know, like very well known. How did that happen?
Right. Okay. Okay.
And the motive for that to take place. So there's just so much that's going on now, man. So no, can you be wrong? No. About what you find something that works, you go at it, and the moral of the story.
Interesting.
Not everybody going to creep. Go ahead.
I'm going to ask you all a tough question, gentlemen. Maybe it's not tough. If you took cell phones, televisions, iPods, computers, and all that away from young people who we say are challenged and troubled children, how far do you think you can get to capturing their attention, their undivided attention? Take all that away from them. Either one of y'all want to go first. Go ahead.
Taking it away from them today is going to be a very difficult thing to face. You may have to call it law because mm-hmm. it's that powerful. It's like, you know, if there come a time that a person is aware that addiction, you know, comes in different forms. The addiction is so strong right now that most of them don't even know that they're addicted. So to take it away from them, they're going to be sick. And when I say, I mean sick for real, sick. And without knowledge of it, their reactions to it, you know, it's not something that, I mean, this is an experience that I'm familiar with. It just wasn't easy to do. You know, to first get a cell phone and in school, your grades are dropping. But it was all right before you got a cell phone. And then when you decide that you want to cell phone up, it just didn't sit right. Even as a child, you know, being able to, no, there's no way you can take my phone. No. Yeah, you get to that point. So I've seen that.
Man,
yes,
you got
to
fight on your hands.
You got to
fight on your hands.
Yeah, you do.
You can't fight on your hands.
Interesting. Yeah, that's child abuse now to take away them phones.
hey, man, you don't went deep when you understand what I'm saying? Or tell them they can't have access to a computer or laptop, some of these gadgets. They be ready to call the police. Well, now, gentlemen, look, do y'all not know that is how they're exposed to a lot of these alternative thoughts and ideas at a young age? Last I heard you talk about little babies gyrating and shaking and jiggling and what have you. Where did they learn that at? All y'all do is go to Facebook or someplace like that, YouTube or someplace like that, and they're on there. And they know how to do it well. I mean, they can outdo grown folk. You understand what I'm saying? Now, am I suggesting that there's absolutely no place for those devices? No, I'm not. But let's be honest. Let's have grown folk conversation here. That's how those children are exposed to most of the ideas that the vultures out there seeking to turn them out are looking for. I never understood, I still can't bring myself to accept that someone would allow their child to get baited in by somebody on the Internet. What you doing on the Internet in the first place without supervision? I don't want to sound naive now, but what I'm telling you is the real answer, take it away. They don't need it. They're not going to die without it. St. Louis, I got up this morning in a hurry to get over to my office, and I left my cell phone, man, in the living room. And do you know I like to have a conniption fit? I like to have a heart attack. Where's my phone? Man, I got halfway to the office. It's about 20 minutes away from where I live, and I had to turn around, man. I was about to lose it, man. And then I caught myself. And I asked myself, St. Louis, what's the most that would have happened if I left that joker sitting right where I left it? What's the most would have happened? What's the worst would have come up? Then I realized I was in a panic for nothing. Huh?
Well, yeah, it has became a necessity.
Yes, yes. I get there are several literary sources that I get emails from, write up to date things, and that helps me to stay abreast to current events in the field and literature and that sort of thing, as well as business related things and phone calls. But those people weren't going to die if I had to come back and answer their messages later. Now, I consider myself a responsible adult, but put yourself in the shoes of a little child who feels like 4/7, they have to have those things speaking to them and guiding them and dictating to them. You understand what I'm saying? That's the power of subliminal control. And it is a father who sets the tone for the environment under which a child is kept safe from every and anything. Every and anything. And all I'm saying, gentlemen, is really, I know how difficult and how much a fight. I faced that years ago when I taught in high school, man. And young folks, that's my phone. You take my phone out, blah, blah, blah. Wow, wow, easy. It's just a phone. My mama paid for that phone. You can't have it. All right. But somebody needs to do something, right? And maybe I'm wrong. Yep. 657-383-0944. We still got a little time to talk about it. Get me correct. We're talking about what it means to be a father. And let me just reiterate, between someone who offers sperm in the process of bringing a baby in the world, that's one thing. That don't make you a father. But fatherhood is a divine state of existence. You don't get there just because you're a male. But you grow into that. You grow into that. And Thursday, I'm going to delineate those stages, 4 to 5 stages that are identifiable to becoming a father. Becoming a father. Here's the problem. Society now, and certain voices in society, have become so loud that many people assume they are the right voice. And they're the ones that should be. They ain't even listen to preachers no more, Pastor Mark. They ain't even listen to preachers no more. Can you believe that, Pastor Mark?
They ain't listening to what anymore?
They're not even listening to the voice and authority of the preacher anymore.
Oh, okay.
Listening to the voice. Teaching about family and these values and what God said. They ain't listen to the preacher.
I'm sorry, I cut you off. No, I agree. That happens, man. Like, as I said, you know, they can tune you out really quick because, you know, it's power in what they're learning today for themselves. It's big time power. With the intent, because it's the device that's being used to get their undivided attention. So why pay attention to something that's going to benefit you? Because what they think they're doing, giving their time to focus on, if you will, it's going to make everything more effective for them. That's the pattern of the thought that comes in as a tool to intercept, you know, good guidance. You know, good guidance would be too much like right.
You know what I hear people saying, and these are my beloved church folks. That baby too young for that. They don't understand all of that. Well, if you're feeding them, St. Louis, you're clothing them, and you're providing shelter for them, don't you have the authority to dictate how much they learn? And I think you said you demanded it, certain things, right? Don't you have that authority? Who else is?
Yeah, if you can handle it.
When you say if you can handle it, what do you mean, if you can handle it?
Some people don't know how to handle authority.
Now, that's wow. That's a good point. That's a very good point. I've seen the case where some people who were trying to be a father and misunderstood the leverage of the authority, and it became a physical punishment thing, right? And it led them to being locked up because they misused that authority as a father. It wasn't about their physical presence, but it was about the voice, the communication, the connection. And that don't start when they get to be 15 or 16 years old, 12, 13. That's about at birth. You got to be there at birth. I'm saying something tonight, y'all. I'm saying something tonight. But that's it. That's it. Now, is that going to happen? For somebody that missed out on that? No, it's not. And I'm not suggesting it has to for you because that's over, right? But we can break the cycle for these young cats out here chasing Miguel's right now and making babies every day. Help me, Holy Ghost. What were you going to say, St. Louis?
No, I agree with you.
I mean, I messed up already, Pastor Wallace, St. Louis. I done made my bed. I got to lay in. Hopefully, I can use my example to tell some young person, some young man, some young lady about how to do this thing right. See? And it's a blessed thing for them to start a family, commit themselves to one another, bring forth offspring, and live happily ever after. That's a good thing. That's not a curse. That's not a bad. But a lot of young guys, I've talked to a lot of young guys, they're afraid, gentlemen, that the experiences they have, they're going to repeat it with their children. And that's their biggest fear. They don't do that. And I get that. That's why it's important that we teach responsible man, responsible fatherhood, and how to avoid those pitfalls. It don't make you a bad person to make a mistake. But what becomes detrimental and harmful is when you justify the continuance of that behavior that is a bad thing. And that's what makes a mistake. It's not beneficial to you. You see what I mean? So, I mean, I dropped my milk, Pastor Wallace. I ain't got no cookies, no milk from a cookie. What do? Do I cry? Do I fight? Do I scream? Or go get me some more milk? Huh, Pastor? Come on, man.
Follow instructions. It would be great to do that.
Right. Now, let me ask this question, gentlemen. Thursday, I'm going to spend time explaining what I'm talking about in terms of stages of growth and development. And this is the workbook that I penned and self-published some other things to go with it and when we were doing our workshop. Let me ask this question. I heard on Father's Day, believe it or not, on Father's Day, I heard some sweet women get up and say, I was the father and the mother for my children. Y'all help me explain that like I'm 3 years old. Somebody help me out, please. Is that possible? I think I know what they were saying. But y'all help me. Is that possible for the mama to be the father and the mama? Come on, Facebook. Don't put your give it to me. I know Doctor done went off the rail now. he done went there. He's been crazy now. Come on, give it to me. 657-383-0944. Facebook, go on, post your question. Come, we have a good wholesome dialogue. This is gonna help somebody. Is that possible, gentlemen? For the mama to be the father and the mama? Come on, somebody now.
If it's not designed to be that way, I mean, so why make it be something that is not? If it's designed to be that, I mean, that's different. But if you look at what was designed, I mean, that's just the way it is. But my mother was a great mother. That's all she could be, was a mother. That's just the way it was. My father went around, so
right.
I never seen her to be father because I've always seen her to be my mother. So I didn't make no mistake about that. That's personal. That's my own knowledge of her.
No.
She being a woman, but I always seen her to be. I never seen her to be a father. So I never have. And I'm glad I didn't, because that would have been confusion to me. You know, it would have been...
I bet you would.
I'm going to make her be something that she's not. I mean, she did a lot for me, and I know she did. She did the best she could with what she had. But I never looked at her as my father, though. And I never heard her say that to me. And she was.
True story.
I don't know about others, but I'm glad that she didn't say it. It helped me to understand that I do know. It's tough.
Well, let me tell you what I hear when I hear, and I personally, as a pastor, I've heard this in church on Father's Day. Let me tell you, and I actually spoke to that in the role of pastor. Let me tell you what I hear when I hear people say that. What I hear them saying is that they were forced to take on double duty, right? And even step outside of the parameters of being a mother, just being a mother, because they had to compensate for the loss, for the imbalance. And when I talk about dysfunctionality, that's what I mean. I don't mean that disrespectfully. It just means that there's an imbalance. And you're right, Pastor Wild. Children are confused. True story, in the grocery store, saw two females holding hands as if they were a couple, and a little child was walking right behind them. And the little child hollered, "Mama." And it was curious to me because I was curious to see who was going to respond. But interestingly, gentlemen, both of them turned to the child and responded. And I wondered what that was like for the child. None of my business. Is that right, St. Louis? They ain't none of my business. But the point I'm making is I can only imagine how confusing that is for the child to have to try to process that as a child. Anybody want to comment on that? What say you, Ms. P, Facebook? What do you think about that? I mean, and I realize that this is a sensitive subject because it's about being politically correct and not offending anybody. It's not about offending anybody. Truth of the matter is our children are precious, and if we really want to understand how to keep them safe and sound emotionally, listen, we need that. There are a lot of young men who are afraid to step up and say that I'm going to be authority in my children's life because you got laws, you got policies, you got interest groups, and you got organizations who are fighting against that. So they just say forget it, right? There are a lot of young men who want to take custody of their children. That's a fight. It was easy for you, Brother Pastor, because, you know, I would imagine you look back in retrospect and you say you wouldn't take nothing for that journey, would you? That's why.
Well, her mother gave it to me.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah, her mother gave it to me. So, you know, it wasn't anything other than, you know, I actually gave her credit, really.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
A lot of people may not have done that, but I gave her credit for doing it later on. When it first happened, it was just a shock to me.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting it.
Right. You know that's not the norm, though, right? Have you ever known that to be the norm, the normal thing for mothers to just give? I'm sure there are cases where it happens, but how normal is that for mothers to give the children to them when there's a decision about who's going to raise them?
No, I haven't heard that quite often. I never checked up on it because it didn't really cause me to do that. But I just know I wasn't expecting for it to take place, and especially at that age that she was. She was only 3 months of age. She was like still unknown to a lot of things, but
mm-hmm.
I accepted it and I embraced it, and I said, well, okay, I need to try to find out why did you do it, or are you sure? I didn't go through none of that. I guess I was stunned. So all I could be was a father to her.
Okay.
Nothing else.
Okay. Now, and watch this. We make mistakes along the way, though. St. Louis, are there anything that you look back in retrospect and say, I would have done different? I won't necessarily say it a mistake, but I would have done different about raising a child, about your children in St. Louis. Is there anything you look back in retrospect and say, I would have done different?
Well, no, when I look back, I don't think I would have done anything drastically different.
Okay. All right. I mean, because there are times where we say, man, I'll use myself as an example, even as a pastor. Now, one thing that I did do is I made sure that on certain nights, I committed myself being there for my son for his scouting activities and other things. But in retrospect, and even my daughter, she was in Girl Scout. If I could go back, I would have made myself a little bit more available to my daughter for her activities. If that makes sense to you, because Mama knows. But if I could go back and do it a little bit different, I don't think she'd hold that against me now, but I'm just saying, I realized that even those things, later on I was able to kind of compensate for it. I had to pick her brain about her choice of music and things of that nature as she was a teenager and a young adult. And we have an open communication and dialogue and that sort of thing. But my point is, I think in retrospect, I would have done that a little bit different. Not that it was wrong or that it was necessarily bad, but I said that to say that there are many of us as fathers who would say, hey, okay, as I look back now, I think I could have done things for my son or for my daughter. The point is that being there is what's important, being there. And sometimes you figure it out together. I'm not suggesting you've got to have all the right answers all the time, but at least if you're there, you can figure it out together. That don't make no sense to nobody, though, does it? That don't make no sense to nobody. We still got a little time. We got about 30 minutes here. 657-383-0944. Facebook, feel free to post a question. Throw a question at me. I got a little time to answer a question. You see if I know what I'm talking about here. Pose a question to me. That's why you got any questions for me, man? Anything you want to know? Put me on the spot here, Pat. Put me on the spot.
Hey, man, I love to do that, but I don't think you would be unable to handle it. So I can ask you some things. I'm sure you got to be aware of it. What it's like to have both parents in the household and to know that you're giving them the nourishment and the correct form of admonition versus two parents being in the household and being given them not. One is giving them so, and the other is giving them not. It's training the best admonition, you know, that they deserve and stand in the need of. So you got both parents there. You know, only one you can identify with by way of experience is that you were there and your wife was there, the kids were there, and they had the right, quote, ammunition to be trained up. And did it had, was it because of the environment or was it because of the parents? Because you got two parents still have kids, that both parents are there. But yet, still, they still got caught up. If you follow what I'm saying, so it really doesn't boil down to having the parents there. It has to do with something else that comes with it. So, what would you say about, you know, what actually worked for you and your wife and your family?
Great question. Well, I tell you what. One of the things I realized is that. Both of our children have to understand that there was no room to manipulate us, right? Now, my wife tells everybody that I spoiled my daughter to death, that she is a spoiled brat, right? But one thing about it, she always knew that when we, whatever we agreed on that was the standard for both of them, that was going to be it. And my daughter come to realize that, Dad, you know, she just looked at me like she was mad. But I tell her all the time, I was the first Negro you ever rolled your eyes at. When she came out, I was right there and cut them biblical cord. And when she heard my voice, she rolled her eyes in my direction. So I'm the first Negro you rolled your eyes at. So that don't bother me.
Yeah.
But I think to your point, though, you're right. Again, probably one of the gentlemen, I'm trying to use it, for lack of a better word, the most scary moments with me was realizing that they're in the world now. I had something to do with that, and it's on you now. You got to get it right. And you don't always, there's no book that says what a perfect parent is going to be, a father or mother, other than what the word tells you. And that is that if both of y'all are working in promise and you following the guide that was laid out from the Creator, one question I asked in the first Facebook post was, where did the idea of fatherhood originate from? And I submit to you that it came from the Word. You understand what I'm saying? From the beginning, from creation. And it was prescribed certain things that were in place in order for that to function. I know that sociologically we're not living in the reality of biblical times. I get that. But the question we should ask ourselves is, what is it that we're going to do? Will we be like Joshua and say, as for me and my house? We got a Facebook post. This is what Ms. P says. It is most definitely out of order, as God gave a father and mother specific duties by design. She goes on to say, however, in the absence of the father, the mother had to take on the father's role, which has contributed to the dysfunction of the family dynamic. I don't think it can be said any better. I don't think. What do y'all think about that? Thank you, Ms. P. Thank you, Ms. P. That's been Facebook. What do y'all think about that? Is it? Listen, she's stressed. She's wore out because she's trying to assume dual roles. I think that's the best. What, say, Lord, what are we going to say?
Well, you got a functional home. The other men, male figures step up to take the place of a father.
Okay.
And actually, if it was really functional, if the father was no good, the marriage never would have took place anyway because they would have saw to it. But we live in a different society today, so it is what it is.
This is true. This is so true. And here's to that point, St. Louis, here's the thing. When you look at the mores of today, they're very different. And I won't say that all black people, if we could use that phrase, think and believe the same way. Many of them share the same values that they want the best for their children, you know. And some people just don't know how to make that happen. They're not aware. And
no, they don't. That's a process. You know, I'm going to tell you something. It's better than what you think it is. I was listening to a reading where Teach for America in St. Louis is abandoning the school systems in the St. Louis area.
Really?
Because
what?
The academic outcomes is just deplorable.
Interesting.
Now, you can't blame them, right? Because they're teaching in the urban inner cities because of an obligation, a promise that they made.
Correct.
All right. But at the same time, you got young professionals, teachers that's trying to produce a resume. And they don't want to have them bad entries of being associated with these academic failures.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
That's what it's about. Yeah.
You know, through Teach for America and Vista Corps and what have you, they'll pay off your student loans for you if you go into
that's what it's about. Yeah.
Yeah. In the public area. And it is sad that they would pull themselves out. I wonder, though, if it's because of, and we kind of deterred a little bit, I wonder, though, if it's because of a lot of the policies that these school districts are adopting that make it hard for people.
See, it's the academic performance. That's what it is. When you have school districts where high school is 9 to 12, where the math proficiency is 5% and read proficiency is about 10, that's no good. Nobody wants to have that on their resume that I taught in a classroom where the class math proficiency was 5%. In another high school close by, it's less than 1%. Over 900 students. 900 students and your math proficiency is less than 1%, 3% for reading. Who wants to be associated with that?
Well, in Tennessee, they call it value added, right? And that's a measurement of teacher performance, that value add measurement. So I get what you're saying. You know, here's the thing, though. Let's relate that conversation to one of the primary voices of that a father, the benefit of a father working with a mother. It should be, I'm saying it should be a practice in every home, considering the fact that you learn to read from birth to about 3 years old, and from there you read to learn. Once you're able to read, you can take on instructions about things like math and science and other things, right? And you can keep up on your own, keep a pace on your own. And this is why I'm saying, making a statement. It should be a practice in every home. It's a practice in many homes, but it should be a practice in every home that you have focused time for parents to engage in reading skills and develop, language development, communication with their children. This factors into their ability to do things like math and logical processing that is associated with science and so forth and so on. You follow what I'm saying, gentlemen? And we take that for granted as if automatically that's going to come. You know, that you've heard me talk about collection of toys. If you're going to buy toys for the holidays, for Christmas, okay, fine. But the reality is, if you're buying toys, how are they helping develop your children emotionally, psychologically, and even in their intellectual thought and development? Here I am getting in people's business again, tell people what to do. Yes, I am, because there's some of my people don't know what to do, obviously, and it's evident. So it's not all the teachers, St. Louis, in the school system. As it is, parents need to understand the power of their voice and the role they play in their children's learning process. That extends to the public school or even the private school, for that matter. That don't make sense, though, does it? Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving right along. I want to go back to something that Ms. P said. Ms. P made a very, very important observation. And what she said is that there was an order established for families. I'm paraphrasing her a little bit. I don't want to change her thought. I'll just read the point that she made. It is most definitely out of order as God gave the father and mother specific duties. Okay? That's what I'm making reference to. This idea that a woman don't have any role or duties that she's confined to is counterproductive, again, I would argue, to being able to have a husband work with her in the context of his commitment, because he has defined roles and duties. If he falls short of them, there's going to be dysfunctionality. Just likewise, if the wife or the mother does so, there will be dysfunctionality. So having a specific role and a function is not a bad thing. Not a bad thing at all, you know? And here's the question. How is it then that we redefine what has been defined over the last, I'm going to say, 40, 50 years relative to these relationships and these roles and the expectation and responsibility? Some people don't even want to deal with it, Pastor Wallace. I mean, because it's too much of a fight. They've just thrown their hands up. But you know who are the victims when any of us throw our hands up? The babies. That's who lose out. Am I wrong about that, Pastor? I mean, can you see that?
No. No, they always will lose out when it comes down to that, because it's they lean and depend upon the parent, which is rightfully so. And, you know, if you continue to embrace everything that's put before you, like it's popular, as I said, you know, when a certain thing come on a certain day, you know, a lot of people entertain it and give it a whole lot of energy. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, you know, I don't know where they get the information from. Maybe it's from the news. I don't know. But it seems like it reaches everywhere and put everybody who participate on the same accord. How does that work? Apparently, because, you know, when they make known of it, it's like, there it is. It's right there.
Right.
Until one starts to rebuke, that's unfair to the child. The children, man, they're so innocent. But that's what the trap is all about, though. That's why they, you know.
I have to agree with you.
Trap. Yeah, and it takes place.
I got another Facebook poster, and we had we got this little weather out here, and my connection was affected by it again. But Ms. P posted this. She says, further still, if the parents do not reside in the same home, they can purpose, make a concerted effort. This is powerful right here, Jeff. A concerted effort to maintain their role. Wow. As they work together.
Well, she's right. She's right. There's many alternatives. See, there's one desirable, proved and tested way, but when conditions don't afford people to institute that way, then of course you got alternatives. But even if you're in the same household and you wanted to divorce, that divorce should be put off until those children are raised, because that's more important. Now I think that's what I think.
I'm feeling you on that thing. I'm kind of feeling you, man. In the interest of, well, now, what if it's a lot of fighting and, you know what I'm saying, St. Louis?
Well, opposite of that, but I'm talking about if it was just no violence and abuse, but just plain disagreement and a restitution have came. to separate. Well, that separation, that should be put off until those children is raised. Sleep upstairs, one downstairs. But most important thing is those children.
They want to sleep upstairs, I'll sleep downstairs. Look, man, I think that's solid. Now, here's the thing, and what Ms. P was saying is you have got to put your personal feelings aside and ask yourself, as the father or as the mother of this child, how important is it for me to work with them in the interest of the child? See what I'm saying? Now, what happens is if there's another marriage, another relationship, it clouds things, but responsibly, it's important that both of them children realize that they don't have to choose between their parents, their father and their mother. And this is real in 2021. This is a real challenge in 2021. I mean, let's be honest about it. That's a real challenge for a lot of good people, you know. And the reality, and I've been, when I work with gentlemen and I used to advise them about how to go to the family courts and how to seek out some custody and how to deal with child support and things of that nature, right? And I would say to them, it may not be the reality that you can live with their biological mother, but you need to humble yourself enough to have a communication and relationship enough with her, even if she's remarried. And that means you may have to have a relationship with her new husband. Understanding is what I'm saying. In the interest of you to be able to have a presence in your child's life. And that's not easy to do. A lot of people's egos won't allow them to do that. I mean, you know what I mean? That's my child. Listen, it is your child, but there are some barriers. There are some barriers. So there you go. There you go. And it's possible that two good people are just not good for one another to start, you know, becoming intimate because you're not ready to make that full-throated commitment to be one and to provide that promise for the children that will come from the union. That's teaching preachers ought to do, Pastor Wallace. Now, you don't teach that in the public schools, in social service. That ought to come from the preacher. God gave you the authority to teach that. We're talking about the beginning, from the beginning now. Go ahead, what were you going to say, Sandor?
Well, yeah, that's true. You know, I'll tell you something else. There's got to be a classification of difference for what you call black society. Because this thing trying to lump all blacks into this paradigm is fictitious for one thing, and it's not working.
That's right.
Let's just face it. It's just not working. For whatever the reason, people can say, well, it was a hailstorm that day. Well, I don't know if it was. It just ain't working.
Okay. That's a fact. I mean, and look, we got to face that as a reality as well, right? Now, I'm one of those who...
And same way with other groups, too, but we're talking about black folk, Negroes, and colors, like you always say.
You know what, St. Louis? My academic advisor, rest his soul now, he used to wear me out back then. Dr. Quit saying that. I said, look, man, if it's not true, then let me know if I'm wrong about it. That's how we've been classified, Negro, black, color, and African-American. Anyway, that's where we are today. But no, it's a reality because everybody is not monolithic in that regard. And I'm one of those who really think we, given our plight, we should be unified. I believe it. And I know that's a utopian idea. That's utopian in nature. I get it. But I just believe that. And I pray one day we will get there, man, because I hate to see any of our people fall by the wayside. You know?
Well, you hate to, but, you know, for instance, like schools. When a school is 100% black, the academics is terrible. When they 20% blacks, you start, that's about when you see a success in black academics. You know, I'm going to tell you something else, too. They were taking these names off of these school buildings because they were named after soldiers that fought in the Civil War.
saw that.
Well, you know, when I've done the study, I'm not finished, especially down in southern Louisiana, New Orleans. You know the schools that's named after Confederate soldiers, and some of them is majority black, that the black kids do better academically than this in the schools that's named after so-called black heroes like Malcolm X.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of that. I've heard of those. But I think that, isn't that because of the quality of instruction there, though?
No, you know what it is. See, who would push for a change in the name of the school? It's the people in the community. Well, instead of you working to do that, why don't you work to make sure that these children are performing to the top of their ability?
Yeah.
You putting your effort on trivial things.
Yeah. A lot of platitudes out there, man. People live, you know, speaking platitudes and what have you. Then you got to face reality. You understand what I'm saying? The bottom line is, if our babies, and they can, I believe they can. That's what I believe they can. But if our babies are going to do better and improve, we've got to be focused and deliberate about what it takes to get them there. You know, yes, you are 10 years old, and you can't read on the level of a second of a kindergarten or first grade, right? That just means we have to go back to those fields in a respectful way.
Well, Floyd Mayweather couldn't read.
No, true, but he's a heck of a boxer.
He's a heck of a businessman.
Yeah, he is. Look, you know, you said that. You know who I thought was a pretty good businessman, and that was Joe Frazier, rest his soul. I thought he was pretty, he had a pretty good head on him, you know what I mean? And he was definitely a legend. Couldn't hardly speak well.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. I was seeing a video skit where Joe Frazier was in the training ring, and some preachers came in begging for money. He chased them out.
Wait a minute, Joe. Wait a minute. Well,
yes, he did. He chased them out. Oh, boy.
Well, I might be one of those preachers begging for money, so I've got to take up a preacher.
None of them didn't look like you.
Well, so, yeah, we just got a few minutes. Great conversation, gentlemen. What it means to be a father. And I realize that conversations like these are likely not going to get a whole lot of traction. But Lord willing, I hope to have a few fathers on with us on the 17th, I believe. That's the Thursday before Father's Day. And just, you know, talk about your experiences as a father. I believe that'd be a very helpful thing. So I'm going to call and reach out.
That's the most hectic day in the black community, Father's Day. How that woman managed to have those fathers come over where they don't run into each other gets me.
Well, that's a factor too for many. That's a factor too for many. But hey, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
But I was kind of jokingly when I said that. But no, what it takes to... something is not that you wake up in the morning and become. And actually, it's basically like anything else. It's when you observe and also experience. When you experience the things that you appreciate, grow to appreciate, and feel to appreciate, and then you associate that with being a good father, then you yourself want to be able to give light in turn to others, which would be your children. See, this is the thing. A person don't care what you say to them or what you do to them. A person remembers how you made them feel. That's what will stick with them.
Okay. I think that Erickson would agree with you in one of the stages of development there. That he suggests is critical to latency in life, you know, between 5 and 9 years old, St. Louis. He suggests, along with some other behaviorists, that that's a key period in growth and development. And children, in the back of their mind, how you made them feel if they felt secure or not, it's going to impact. Now, there are things that can happen that can override that, but in general, it's a subconscious thing. That affects how they move and they act and things of that nature as adults. So, powerful point, man. That's a powerful point. That's a powerful point.
Okay, well, I'll see you Thursday.
Thank you, my brother. We appreciate you, man. Have a great day, and we'll look forward to
you
that
too,
conversation. All right, sir. So we've been talking from the topic what it means to be a father, and I'm convinced that it's a very important discussion, and I don't want my sisters to think at all that in focusing on that and pointing out those things that take away from you and your very vital role in humanity. It doesn't. In fact, what we want to do is to make it easier for our sisters to be able to be the mothers that they want to be, that they were called to be, that they were purposed to be. In fact, I felt my help right there. I'm trying not to preach, but I feel something like that. Up, glory.
All right. Go ahead.
There is a very, very powerful thing when a man and a woman can come together. And I'm not just talking about physical intimacy. I'm talking about a mental thing. That's a powerful thing. And the enemy wants them to be divided, wants them to be pitted against one another. Won't there be conflict, controversy, competition? The devil is a lie. In the name, boy, okay. Look here, Pastor. Don't take it, man, before I lose. I'm about to lose it around here, man. Wrap us up. We've been talking from what it means. Pastor Wallace going to wrap our conversation up for tonight.
Hey, man, some of the things that it's a learning experience for a lot of guys, you know, to be able to get a chance to experience that. It's a beautiful thing once a person learns the meaning of it. I haven't always known myself, but I learned through the process and got a chance to experience what it's like to be a father. But in the meantime, it's not something to look at for just one day. It's it become a lifestyle, and that's the thing that I would always remember, that I didn't just receive it, embrace it, and accept it for a day. I had to take it day by day, and so it's not easy because of the way society is built up, and again, not everybody have that experience, so it's a twist to it now, and I'm sure it's tough. But however, I know there's a God that sits high and looks low.
Watch it now.
Exactly what we stand in the need of, and if that was a time.
Yes,
but we need to get back lined up to the originator and let him do the guiding and everything. It's going to be all right. Other than that, you know, it's like it's for more confusion, because that's a part of it as well. But I just want to say to those who have tuned in, and thank God for you, Pastor Doctor, for what you're doing, and you continue to do
what you're
doing, and I believe that it would be more effective to know that as long as you put God first, in spite of what others say, think, or feel, so I'm going to exclude him when that would be a confusion in motion, like if fact field in motion, you know, intelligent people and would say, God, you're not first. Matter of fact, you're not second. You're all the way down the line, if that at all. So I don't want to never take away from the true father, because that's the one, you know what I mean? Say, pray to the father.
Yes, sir.
Capable man. I mean, once we include him, we can't deny that. I'm going to say this and turn it over, because there is another father, you know, the father of the devil, you know, and that father right there, brother,
has got a lot of people twisted.
Yes, sir.
We want to make sure we got the real father, the one that made this day. That's the one we got to speak to, man, and let him know that it's all right to know that you are the one that we should acknowledge first. And after that, it's time to get him the praise, the glory, as well as the honor.
All right.
Just don't deny. Just give him his props. It's not going to hurt. You know what I mean? In the beginning, you know what I mean? It's going to feel good, but it's not going to hurt. It's going to be good for you once you can just step out on faith and know that it's all right. I yield back to you on that note, Pastor Doctor. You got to step out on faith and get him his props, man. He's all right.
That's a good thought to leave on. That's a good thought to leave on. We'll be back Thursday for another episode of Talk Straight, where we will talk about the growth process, the male growth process, how you go from a little boy to being a father. Pastor Waller, I call. Thank you. And thank you, Ms. P, and all of that following us here. We'll be back Thursday for another episode. Sam Cook going to take it home. If you ever change your mind, bring it on home to me. What you say, Sam? What you say?
If you ever change your mind.